Well, the parable of the prodigal son is well known to us. So well known that it's in that category of parables that often we read through very quickly to arrive at the joyful reunion at the end. And as a result, we sometimes maybe miss some details along the way. It's a familiar hymn, and as I was preparing for this morning, I thought, what can I add to this? What can I tell you about this parable that you don't already know? So here goes. Now, this parable has traditionally been understood as expressing God's love and mercy, demonstrated in the father's actions towards his younger son. It's a comforting story. It reminds us of God's love. However, we are well served to slow down and to gain a little bit of a better understanding of the parable. And as we journey through Lent towards Good Friday and Easter, we should also be mindful of reading this parable through those events of Holy Week. We would be well served to keep the sacrifice made by Jesus on the cross in mind as we read this parable. And we will find that the parable is perhaps more about more than just God's love. But first, let's turn our attention to the characters in our story, and let's start with the younger son. And I want to be very clear here. The younger son is not a nice person, and that's putting things politely. His request for half of his share of the inheritance is the equivalent of saying, "Dad, I wish you were dead." Have you ever been to someone's home, or perhaps you've seen it in TV or in the movies, where there's a whole bunch of family pictures, but one of the frames is face down on the table, and you don't know who that picture of? Well, that picture is the younger son in this story. He has essentially said to his dad, "You are dead to me." And it wouldn't be surprising if dad therefore said, "Well, you're dead to me." Of course, we know that that doesn't happen in our story. But within the cultural context, the son has said, "Dad, you are dead to me." And so it shouldn't be surprise us if the parents think this way, but the father does not. But I share this with you to give you a sense of how vile the son's actions were. And of course, it gets worse, doesn't it? Because the inheritance isn't money, it's land. And the son goes, and after a few days after receiving the land, he sells it all for money, sells the family's land, his inheritance, to someone else, a neighboring farmer, for money. And then he goes and he squanders that money. Now, these actions of demanding the inheritance and then selling the land would have brought about a great deal of shame upon the society, upon the family. In fact, one of the most surprising things about this parable is that the father agrees to the demand at all. Of course, if he didn't, we wouldn't have the parable, would we? But the son goes off and squanders his wealth. And then he finds himself feeding pigs. Now, that might not strike you as odd, but our assumption is that the son is Jewish. Jews don't eat pork. And so you gain a sense of how far the son is from home, both literally and metaphorically. He has traveled a long way from home. And so he decides, "I will go home. I will apologize. I will try to make things right, and I will tell my father that I will work as one of his hired hands." For surely that's better than his current position. Now, whether the son has a true change of heart or just thinks that he can con his old man, we don't know. Remember, what the son has done is very vile and evil. It is not a thing that families should be doing to one another. But we don't know his motives for going back, if they're just self-serving or if there's true forgiveness on his part. What we do know is that the father welcomes the son with open arms, much to the chagrin of his older brother. An older brother who is fuming that this son of yours has come back. He is unable to see his brother as a brother, as if his brother were dead to him. The attitude of the older brother is telling. He indicates that he has been slaving away for all these years at the behest of his father. He does not understand or see the abundance that he is already living in. Now, when I compare these two brothers, I have to honestly ask the question, which one is the worst son? The one who said, "Dad, I wish you were dead, give me what is mine," or the son who has viewed himself as a slave all these years, a son who has no joy written on his heart? Who is the worst son? The one who actually says, "Dad, drop dead," or the one who is waiting for his dad to drop dead so that he will be freed from his imagined slavery? Both brothers have a broken relationship with their father. Within the traditional reading of this parable, we need to ask these questions. We understand the grace that is offered to the younger son. However, we also need to understand the grace which has always been present for the older son. Their attitudes are important as they help to shape our understanding of the parable and of our own relationship with God. Now, there is a further thing with the older son, and it ties into the opening verses of this chapter from Luke. You see, Jesus is having a meal when he tells this parable. We don't know what type of meal it was. It could have been a lavish feast, or it could have just been some bread and cheese. But we do know who he's eating with. He's with tax collectors and sinners, and he is within sight of a group of Pharisees. In fact, he's close enough that he overhears them saying, "Look, he's with tax collectors and sinners," that Jesus then goes and tells this parable, the parable of the prodigal son. And in many ways, the attitude of the older son mirrors that of the Pharisees, as they are unwilling to eat at the same table with the lost. They don't want anything to do with sinners, just as the older brother wants nothing to do with his younger brother. The Pharisees are so lost within their own perceived purity that they cannot recognize that other people need God's grace. They forget that God's grace is available to all people. Now, a traditional reading would put the elder son perhaps in the position of the Pharisees, and the younger son as the sinners, perhaps those who we could identify ourselves with. And the father is, of course, seen as representing God through his acts of forgiveness and love. And it all ties things up all nice and neatly, this parable. It's rather clean. And I'm not suggesting that there's anything wrong with a traditional view of this parable. However, I do wonder if there is another element at play. And it is within the context of Lent and the arrival of Good Friday and Easter that I want to consider this. One of the key Christian doctrines is that of atonement, the doctrine of atonement, which is a fancy way of saying what happened on the cross. Why did Jesus need to die? And one of the most enduring thoughts on this comes from a gentleman by the name of Anselm and his theory of substitutionary atonement. Big words. Anselm formulated this theory in the 11th century. So in short, this theory says that because God is just, human sin must be punished. However, because God is loving, God doesn't want to punish humanity. So God is just, and human sin must be punished. But God is loving and doesn't want to punish humanity. The result is Jesus, who Anselm refers to as the God-man, who can take the punishment, thus satisfying God's need for punishment. Now, the theory isn't perfect, but it has endured for 1,000 years. And one criticism of this theory is, why does God need to punish at all? Why doesn't God just forgive? As we see in the parable of the prodigal son, God forgives, or the Father forgives. Why demand justice at all? And I think that one of the reasons why this theory endures is because we like to add things up, and we have an innate sense of fairness. To give you an example, if one child gets one cookie and the other child gets two cookies, what does the first child want? Another cookie, right? He wants what the other got. He wants his or her fair share. They want to know that things are even, that events are being settled properly. This is the view of the elder son. And we can empathize with him. We can understand why he is angry at his younger brother. However, that doesn't forgive his attitudes towards his father. However, in addition to all of this, today, we also like to remember past grievances. As a society, we are not good at forgiving. We are not good at forgiving other people, and we are not good at forgiving ourselves. And this is where Anselm's theory begins to break down a little for me. Why do we need to add it all up? Why do the scales need to be balanced? Clearly, in the parable of the prodigal son, there isn't a concern with everything being balanced. The younger son is not asked to repay his half. Here in the parable of the prodigal son, we have an example of forgiveness on display. Forgiveness which is modeled on how God operates in the world. Now, I would like to leave you with one last image, a twist, if you will, on this parable. To provide a new way of thinking about the parable of the prodigal son, and perhaps to provoke some additional questions about it. Imagine, if you will, that the elder son still does represent the Pharisees, with an inability to see how God offers mercy and how God forgives. However, do not view the father in this story as God. Instead, I would like you to see yourself as the figure of the father or of the mother, as the one who forgives. And the younger son is Jesus. Jesus who asks if we will accept him, even if he's hanging out with tax collectors and sinners, even if he reeks like a pigsty. Will you embrace him with love? Will you run out to meet him? Will you share a banquet with him? The same Jesus who said, "When you did this to the least of these, you did it to me." Do we have the ability to see the face of Jesus in those who are not like us? Or must we remain as the elder brother, demanding that everyone conform to our expectations? This is the question which the parable of the prodigal son forces us to answer. Can we love and forgive as Jesus does? The same Jesus who will hang on a cross for our sake. Not to see that God's desire for justice is met, but to demonstrate God's love. The cross event demonstrates how far God is willing to go to show God's immense love for us. Love, which is available for sinners, for younger sons and daughters, and for elder sons and daughters. Love, which is available to all people who live with broken relationships. Amen.